Cause I know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody who knows. I know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody who knows. I whistle while I work it.
And welcome to AFL Tonight. This is ArenaFan.com's weekly look at everything arena football. I am Tim Capper along with Adam Markowitz. Hey, you're not on the injury report this week, are you?
Nope, healthy. No,
hey!
No, my voice is back. I am totally healthy.
I thought you could easily have had a good, you know, if you would have gone into record making. I swear, I said Kim Carnes. Pff, you could have done it. I mean,
I was definitively a game time decision last week.
There's really one thing, Adam, this week, and it's something that we're going to center on, obviously, is this past week. It was injuries. Injuries, 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 and it's probably one of the most probably one of the worst weeks ever in arena football that I can remember when it comes to major injuries of this sort that have occurred in one particular week. I think it was four major quarterbacks that went down: Eric Meyer, Jason Boltis, Kyle Riley, and Randy Hibbert. Forget anybody?
Well, Rally technically went down.
Right, right. But it's something that it was the game time decision this week. We were expecting him to start, and it wasn't.
Well, he actually, they sent him home.
Oh, was it? Is that what it was? Okay.
He wasn't even there, so, I mean, it was, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, hence why he was inactive and that he didn't start. Anything from Eric Meyer with the collarbone, who had a successful surgery done. He's gone for 6 weeks. Jason Boltis, it looked worse than it originally is now. We've heard it's a deep bruise. Rally, and this is quote unquote a lower body injury. That's the official word that we've heard. And then Randy Hibbert is, well, as we find out, it's an MCL.
Yeah, well, it's better than ACL because that's sure what it looked like.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a large domino effect when this type of stuff happens in the AFL, and it's something that I have talked about in you know, shows past and in years past about the AFL and the, you know, lack of supply of worthy starting quarterbacks and worthy replacement quarterbacks also. I don't know where to go from here. I mean, you know, first and foremost, let's look at Eric Meyer and the Spokane Shock. You know, we find out that they did sign two quarterbacks, right, Adam, just now as we were taping. And the quarterbacks that we have never heard of before at all, at least from what we have seen. The first guy from Spokane was Dennis Havrilla, and the other guy was Donovan Porteray. We know about Donovan. He was with the Green Bay Blizzard, not of the AF2, but of the IFL, and we have found little information when it comes to Havrilla.
Yeah. You almost get the feeling that Spokane would be better served doing exactly what they did last week and essentially not having a quarterback.
And, yeah, they did, considering, wow. What, six TDs? He said, I mean, for a first time, mind you, you know, quarterback because nobody had ever seen him play before, but, just a mind blowing game for a guy. He had not played quarterback since, was it high school, was it?
I think it was high school. It's way back.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what they had said it was. I mean, it's, you know, it was a national, you know, it was a national TV game on top of that. But Rashard Carter, I mean, hey, you know, he did what he had to do. He was only 4-7, but he threw for two touchdowns. But he also ran for four. You know, Spokane had six on the day.
Yeah, well, I mean.
And I think Carter, if I'm not mistaken, please, anybody in the Shock organization correct me, I think Carter set a team record for rushing yards in a game.
Wouldn't surprise me.
So, you know, these two new quarterbacks for the Shock, is this a stopgap for 1 week? I mean, okay, We can look at the other quarterbacks that have been in the league before, the ones that have been released from other teams this current year. Andy Olson could have gone any way, but why did he go with to guys that have basically, to us at least in the AFL, are nobodies? Why,
well,
not,
obviously,
why not go with somebody
in the
else?
IFL, yeah, in the IFL, they were nobodies too. I mean, so I look, this is a dark, dark, dark day in AFL history. You know, I complained last year when we took Brian Randall out of, I believe he played in the,
it was PIFL last year.
I think it was at Lehigh Valley. They're in the PIFL. And I moaned. Wait, was this last year or 2 years ago? I think it was the last year when Brian Randall played for the Power. And said that this is what we're reduced to plucking guys out of the IFL. Or the PIFL in this case. And look, not only is that what we're reduced to, we didn't even go and get good guys from the IFL, mm-hmm. from the CIFL, from the PIFL. We didn't go get Omaha's quarterback or Lehigh Valley's quarterback or Erie's quarterback or Saginaw's quarterback or any of the good teams in the alphabet leagues. We didn't go get their quarterbacks. We went and got guys who aren't even playing football right now, who are mediocre at best in a league that is clearly below us. One of the guys that we saw, and I forget which team he was on because I didn't write it down, is Chris Wallace. Chris Wallace is, number one, ancient, and number two, he played in this league before. He was in the AFL in 2011. He played for Pittsburgh. He played for New Orleans. Why not him? Now, I get it. Spokane is a long way away, but I mean, why not – you cannot possibly tell me that for a chance to sniff the AFL – that we could not find a quarterback that is currently on a roster of a professional team. You have to be kidding me,
right?
That's what we've been reduced to.
Well, and my thought would be, I think we talked about it, is that, you know, what about the CFL? And my comment to you was CFL wouldn't happen at this time anyways because of training camps a month away, and they want to keep these guys on the roster because most of these teams currently they will have, you know, between two, you know, three and four quarterbacks that are currently under contract with these teams.
Now, I will say this too. I will definitely say this too. After this coming Tuesday or Wednesday, there will be a whole other crop of quarterbacks out there who are eligible to go get picked up. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones who are not going to get drafted and not going to get signed as undrafted rookies this year. So maybe there is an opportunity here. There's an opportunity. Let's put it that way.
Right.
Now, so maybe this is what Spokane is thinking, a stopgap until you can bring in somebody who maybe has a legitimate shot of playing some football at some point. But I mean, this is bad. If you're really going to see one of these two guys or both of these two guys play in this league this week, I think this is just a horrendous damning moment in AFL history.
Now, we could also bring up to the point for these teams, what about the some teams that have competent backup quarterbacks? You know, what about Chris Deeker? What about Nathan Stanley? You know, why were these guys...
Matt Gutierrez is the first name you would think of.
Oh, that. But why weren't these guys picked up? You know, my thought would be is maybe the price was a little too rich. You know, if you're wanting to get somebody immediately, you have, you know, you're playing your game on a Friday. You know, they're coming off of a short week, Spokane. Even though they are at home. And you need a competent starting quarterback that has AFL experience.
Yeah.
Trying to pick up one of these guys,
here's the thing. What does anybody need? What is, for example, we'll take Cleveland. Okay. Mm-hmm. What does Cleveland need to get back right now for Chris Deeker? Right.
Yeah.
What does Arizona need right now for Matt Gutierrez? Matt Gutierrez. No, that's not right.
No,
No,
it's not right.
I'm sorry. Jason Marietta.
Yeah, I was going to say Marietta, yeah.
Matt Gutierrez is the type of guy who I wouldn't even complain if he got picked up in this league, even though he was a total stiff for Kansas City a couple years ago. You know, I mean, well, what does Arizona need from Marietta?
Yeah.
Nothing.
My only thought from what we're seeing, you know, a lot of the stuff this year we're seeing when it comes, they're trading either, they're trading either future considerations or they're trading a spot on the, on their multiple types of lists that they have.
Well, why would you do that?
Why if you're
Arizona?
Like,
especially if you're dealing with Spokane. Arizona's not dealing with Spokane.
No. That I understand. But what about these other teams? And that's where it leads to me, for me to believe that maybe the price was too high. If you want, say, a starting O-line guy for a backup quarterback,
I don't know. Are my offensive linemen good? Cleveland and Arizona have two of the best offensive lines in the league.
But I'm just saying,
who would you want if you're Cleveland? Wouldn't you rather hang on to your quarterback knowing, having watched and said, oh my God, what happens if this happens to Nick Davila? Oh my God, if we don't have Jason Marietta, who's been here and has learned our system, what in the hell are we going to do? Mm-hmm. I mean, to me right now, maybe the third or fourth most person on any team is the backup quarterback.
Yeah.
So why would you trade that guy for what, no offense, is a dime a dozen type of guy, whether it be a lineman, unless it's one of the really, truly elite players in this league. I mean, really elite. There ain't that much difference between the guy who's going to make second team all arena and the guy who is playing in the IFL right now. There just isn't that much of a difference. And on top of that, there is that much of a difference for the quarterbacks, because now we know teams can't go out and just find them. It'll be interesting to see what Tampa Bay does next week.
Yes. And luckily they have a bye week.
Now, do the Storm bring back Steven Garcia? Does the Storm try to trade for a quarterback? I mean, what does the Storm do? And then the answer is, if they're going to trade, what the hell does Tampa Bay have to trade? So there's that for sure. So I don't know what these teams are going to do. I mean, if LA is really hell-bent on getting rid of J.J. Rattering, we already know Tyler Hansen can't play. So what's next?
It's interesting. It really is, because it's teams are, I will, you know, of all the things that occurred, Orlando and Tampa Bay technically have come off, they came off the least unscathed, at least at the moment. Now, this is from what we're seeing with the quarterbacks that Spokane has signed. They have two quarterbacks now on their roster, right, Adam?
Right.
But let's say if Spokane goes outside of the box, and Coach Olsen decides to go ahead and start Rashad Carter.
Yeah.
Maybe these two quarterbacks that they have signed are literally just that.
That's what I'd do.
Number two and number three.
That's exactly what I would do.
I mean, look at the numbers that he put up.
And one of them I wouldn't suit.
Yeah.
I'd suit one of them. But I wouldn't suit the other guy. I'd let Carter start. Why not? I don't think Spokane's going to throw the ball 20 times this week. I think Spokane's going to keep the ball on the ground all week.
It's going to be interesting. So, unfortunately, for those players who happen to have Meyer on your fantasy team, like myself, you know, you're having to go with a backup quarterback. You know,
we're going
to
see some wing team in the AFL this week.
Yeah. Luckily for Portland, they had Danny Southwick. You know, he is I would call him a competent backup.
I'm telling you, you know what I would have done if I were Spokane? Like, seriously, what I would have done? I would have called up Todd Hamill. I'm dead serious about that. I would have called up Todd Hamill.
Yeah.
I do not be stunned if somebody, especially if there are more injuries this week, if somebody signs him. Because he could come right in and start tomorrow.
Yeah.
Good Hell of a lot better than some guy from Western New Mexico State or whatever, you know, wherever the hell these guys are from.
Trying to check some of the other teams. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Why about Philadelphia? Why didn't Philadelphia? You know, what about Brian Randall?
You know, Randall sucked. He sucked with the power.
So it's.
I mean, Arvel Nelson would be a tremendously valuable commodity, but he's also Pittsburgh's Jack linebacker.
Yeah. So it's a total.
What's Brian Villanueva doing? I mean, he sucks, but at least he could be. You know, at least he's got some experience.
I think right now it's just a matter of having a body on the bench,
But you can't tell me, Tim, that some of these guys who aren't doing a damn thing right now, like Danny Southwick wasn't doing 3 weeks ago, you know, aren't capable? What's Ryan Vayner doing? What's Justin Allgood doing? What are these guys doing? And why can't they play?
Well, my only thought would be is that the people that you've named,
they got real jobs.
About to say they've moved on. They've moved on.
That's a problem for the AFL. That's a massive, massive problem. And for as angry as I was when I wrote that article this week about how bad the quarterback play is going to be, I think it's worse with what we brought in. I think that's more damning than the fact that this is what it's going to be. I think it's so much more damning. And I think you're going to see it. You're absolutely going to see it this week.
I think this is, and we mentioned a few, and I know the fans have been mentioning it also. What better reason to have the AFL start up another AF2 league of some sort? Because,
well, I mean, that's basically, you know, I mean, it's, yeah.
Even if it's just eight teams.
But that's what the IFL is now.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, I mean, you'd still be playing under the arena type of, we saw it work. We know it did work.
It worked in some respects.
No, but because when you're playing a completely different game in some of the lower indoor leagues, which are mostly running a lot, you know, for them, it's rushing is part of the game still. You know, look what Chris Dixon has done since he moved back.
Oh yeah, he's tearing the league up.
Exactly, and passing, but more, I think, in rushing too. Rushing touchdowns.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a different league, you know.
Exactly. That's the problem. That can be the problem. They say, oh, you know, it's a minor thing. No. I don't think it could be very detrimental to a person's game. If you can't get used to the type of rush, et cetera, et cetera. I have all faith in the Shock organization. Coach Olsen may be just doing this, as I said, that sign these two guys as a stopgap.
Absolutely. I mean, you gotta have bodies.
Yep.
But, I mean, you can't find better bodies than this.
Short period of time, I will admit, Adam.
Well, it may be a 6 week period of time. Who knows?
No, I know.
The injury to Eric Meyer strikes me just from having, number one, seen the play he got hurt on, and number two, heard about the diagnosis of the broken collarbone. Mm-hmm. This reminds me of Aaron Rodgers, who I think ended up missing 9 weeks.
Yeah.
I think it was.
And it came back.
So, I mean, don't think by any stretch of the imagination that 6 weeks is firm.
So, I'm thinking it was a stopgap because it is a short week. I would not be surprised, you know, if they have something up their sleeves, when it comes to another quarterback that they're hoping to lure out of retirement to their team, or one that has had more AFL experience or whatever it may be. And I'm not insinuating anything by saying that, by the way, fans, in any way, shape, or form. I'm just saying it may be just a 1 week stopgap. Looking at the other, I mean, like as I said, this week it's going to have to be determined what Tampa Bay is going to do this week. We've heard about Boltis already. It looks like he may be ready to play, or at least go to practice starting next week. And Portland seems to be so far so good, doing okay with Danny Southwick. So it's.
And then there's LA.
And then there's LA. We might as well go ahead and go over with transition. You know, the game they were on, the national game of the week this past week on ESPN2, and they put up another stinker of a game.
And they're still in the playoffs. Hey, God bless the AFL. We're a team that's going to win like 6 games this year is going to get in the playoffs.
We've had worse. The AFL has had worse to make the playoffs. Or is it 6-6 was the max? Or was it somebody a team that was?
I'm pretty sure 5 and I think 5 and 9.
I think it was 5 and 9. Yeah, because
5 and 9 Buffalo got in. I know that.
Yeah, something like that.
I was thinking of the 6-12 is worse than 5-9. I hate to tell you that.
So what needs to be done? I mean, I saw this coming from something that was written by one of our reporters. I saw something that was written through the LA Times. The words that are being used, Adam, specifically is panic mode. Panic mode. And the story surfaced about Coach McMillan basically lambasting his entire team.
That was awesome.
So what can be done? I mean, yes.
Oh, I got a big stack of $100 bills with Aaron Garcia's name on it.
Remember, people need to remember too, is that the LA Avengers were a horrible team also when they were first an expansion club.
Oh, this is so much different.
I know we're talking a difference of 15 years. That I understand.
This version of LA could have bought any player that it wanted.
Besides quarterback, because it looks like something has happened to J.J. Rattering. This is not the same J.J. Rattering that played in Iowa last year.
Yeah, what happened to J.J. Rattering is the same thing that happened to Ryan Vaina, is the same thing that happened to Justin Allgood, is the same thing that happened to Kyle Rowley. They just jumped the shark at some point. I mean, that's really – I mean, what other way to put it than that? I mean, the perfect trade, the perfect, perfect, perfect trade is J.J. Rattering – to the Jacksonville Sharks for the rights to Aaron Garcia. It's the perfect freaking trade. Garcia gets to stay at home. He gets to come back to the league. He gets to be the conquering hero who comes back and saves the LA Kings franchise. He gets to have his name put on AMC for a freaking reality show.
Right.
He gets to do all of this stuff. And LA gets its quarterback and Jacksonville gets a legitimate backup. It's a perfect trade. It is a match made in heaven, and it has been something which we have been insinuating for, what now? Oh, about a year? That Aaron Garcia was going to be playing with the LA Kings.
Well,
I still think that's the best answer.
Yeah, I made the joke too, and I will admit, I made the joke when we interviewed Garcia last year at Arena Bowl, when it was off camera. You know, I too thought he was going to end up in LA. You know? Look at that. We're talking about Chris Dixon. Same thing. Hometown. He wants to play at home. That's why he's not in Orlando or New Orleans anymore. And that's why he's not in the AFL anymore.
Sorry for that. I'll put my phone on silent.
No, it's okay. No worries. No worries. You got your phone. I have my wife sneezing in the background, so it's okay. What else needs to be done? I mean, does this team? Yes, it is. We still need to understand that. Yes, this is an expansion team. Other teams have been able to figure out what to do, and good example is Portland. But you know, we were talking about it last week that you know, through 6 weeks, they had scored half the amount of points. You know, in weeks 1, 2, 3 versus 4, 5, 6. They scored half the amount of points. And look at the points that they put up this week. You know, they put up only 21 points at home.
Yeah, I mean, well, here's the thing. If I'm Bob McMillan, I'm going back to my Chicago team last year and saying, all right, who was on that team that maybe is willing to come to La La Land? What Luke Drone? What's he doing?
There's another good quarterback that we never thought about either. You're right.
Well, I don't know how good of a quarterback he really
well, no,
is.
Well, no. I'm saying, meaning an
he's
available,
a guy who could throw the football.
He's an available quarterback. Yeah.
So I mean, maybe that's what I'm doing here. If I'm Bob McMillan, I'm going back and I'm trying to see who off of that Chicago team, which won 10 games and won the division last year, you know, is willing to give it a shot. Let's see who's here. Let's see. Jared Jenkins, what's he doing nowadays? Nothing. You know, Taurus Johnson, I know he's not in the league. Nate Force, what are these guys doing? See if you can go get some of these guys. George Calvin, he's got a job, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, he doesn't have a job right now in the AFL.
There's another one. We'll throw this out. We're looking at last year's league leaders, Bernard Morris.
Well, he's Orlando's property.
But I'm saying they are available.
He, well,
You know what I'm saying? They are available.
Okay, let's put it this way. If you ain't playing in your own hometown, mm-hmm. which is where – I mean, Bernard Morris lives, from what I gather, like 15 minutes away from my house. Okay, you are not going anywhere unless there's a whole stack of money associated with it. Mm-hmm. By the way, AFL, this is your next problem. You don't pay guys enough money to make it worth their while to get off of their butts from wherever they are to come play in a pinch. You need more money in this league, guys. You gotta have more money. I think if not, this is what you're gonna get.
That's probably another variable too that we'd also need to think about, which I didn't think about. Is like if they currently, if these quarterbacks do have a full-time job, if they were dropped by one of the lower leagues, indoor leagues, and then they have found a real job, you know, that's why some of these guys will go on RTR because they can't come. It's not that they don't want to come; it's because they can't come. So. Yeah, it's, you need to find somebody, yeah, maybe some of these guys do not want to leave their current situation. We've had that before, where, you know, quarterbacks have left their indoor league team and come to the AFL, but it just doesn't seem to be happening this year. And, you know, they're just, you know, quarterbacks are what make this league, you know. So it's frustrating. It's really just seeing what is happening just because of, you know, and it's not just because these four quarterbacks went down this week, Adam, at all. What else besides blowing the team up in LA does, you know, Coach McMillan need to do?
You know what I think the biggest problem is, to tell you the truth, with LA, and this is what I was always worried about with LA. You've got cameras in your face. You've got, you've got, you know, all of this crap going on with pregame shows and fireworks and hookers in cages and all of this stuff going on. And somebody forgot that you got to play football still. The LA Kiss have made themselves such a ridiculous marketing machine, and they've got so many names, and they're creating so much drama that I don't know if they really have the goods to play football now. So what the LA Kiss need to do to succeed on the football field may be something that they can't do, and that's shut all of the crap off and let Coach McMillan go coach football.
If you've been listening to the show for about the past 2 years, you know that we try to bring you an interview each week with somebody that is associated with the Arena Football League in some way. Well, this week is no different. We are going to be talking with somebody who has been able to go from one position with an Arena Football League team to another position, and his Arena Football League career has just exploded, and it's given them many, many new opportunities. Go ahead and listen to this week's interview. When it comes to your job, you always want to be able to move up to a different position. You know, make work not necessarily the monotonous day-to-day operation. Luckily, right now, we're speaking with somebody who has been able to further his career at great distances within the – not only in the AFL but in other opportunities that he's had. We're talking with Dom Errico, who is, as you may remember, has been my special co-host on many occasions here on AFL Tonight. Dom, well, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Tim. How's it going tonight?
Doing good. Doing good. Thanks. Well, first, what many do not know is that you are this year – I think it was for one game last year, correct me. You have one or two games last year that you were the PA announcer for the Pittsburgh Power. This year, you are their full-time PA announcer.
I am the full-time voice this year, and it was. Last year, Bubba had to go out of town for a wedding, and Rob Goodman, the vice president of marketing at the time, said, hey, Dom, I need a PA announcer this week. And so it was the opportunity I had been waiting for, and obviously I was very excited about that, and so I looked at it as an audition. I said, I'm going to go in there and do what I can, mm-hmm. and maybe the team likes what they hear, and there will lead to future opportunities. And as it turned out, that was the only game that the Power won all season at home, so I think that played a little bit to my advantage. But I remember walking out, and Matt Shaner and Peter Hill, the owner and the president of the Power, both of them went out of their way to come over and say, hey, great job tonight. I think we're going to be in touch with you this week. We need to have a meeting. So I was pretty excited at that point hearing those words, thinking, hey, I think I won them over. And then, yeah, a couple of days later, they said, we're going to make a change, but it'll come in the off season, because they didn't want to mess up any sponsorship things,
right,
or anything like that. And I was absolutely on board with that. You know, some of the fiascos PR wise this team has had. I'm like, I am not stepping on any toes. But, they threw me a bone. They let me do some commercials, and then it was definitely exciting. And then of course this year it's been a brand new power team, a brand new exciting time here in Pittsburgh. And, the crowd seems to respond well to it. They like a lot of the things I do. And, I think it helps that we are 4-1 with me as the PA announcer overall. One win last year, and our only loss was that comeback win by Cleveland in the opener. But, overall I'm having a lot of fun, and it's definitely been a blast.
Now, we have heard from people who do the game day ops. We've heard from head coaches and GMs and whatnot. For you, what does it entail to be the PA announcer for a team? What do you do to not only necessarily psych yourself up for the game, but for prep work?
Well, the only prep work is they send me a script. Basically, this is all the sponsor reads that they coordinate with their sponsors. Who's sponsoring the AB cam? Who's sponsoring the KISS cam? Who's singing the national anthem? All of that stuff is scripted out. All the commercials in between drives. So, I mean, everything you're hearing me saying is already written on a script. Makes my life a lot easier. It's not like I've got to make up that stuff on the fly. But then you know what's going on. The only thing that's really unscripted is player intros. Obviously, I have the roster, but if I want to add nicknames in there, if I want to say stuff to get the crowd fired up, that's on me. About a minute before kickoff, I usually give some sort of prep speech, you know, like get them fired up. Most recently, it's been, all right, fans, it's time to clock in at the power plant and go to work. And I think that works well for Pittsburgh because, you know, Pittsburgh's a blue-collar town.
Right, yeah.
They cheer along with that stuff where, you know, you're a hard-working union type, things like that. So I try to tailor my style more towards what I think the home crowd's going to like. And other than that, you know, when we score touchdowns, you know, I usually say the player's name, who caught it.
Mm-hmm.
I will say touchdown, like, as long as I can sometimes. And depending on how exciting the touchdown was or how big it is, sometimes I'll say it with me, Steel City. You know, what I'm feeling at the
–
Okay,
at the, yeah, yeah.
It's, and that's always what PA announcing has been. It's feel the crowd, get a feel for what you think they're going to like. One game, the crowd seemed a little dead at times, and I'm like, they need something to fire them up, and they were doing that yes movement stuff earlier in the game. And so I thought they might be a wrestling crowd. And just at one point I went, woo! And then, you know, they went right with it because it was dead. I'm like, it's quiet. I'll just do that. And of course they fired back right with the same woo. And everybody's like, well, where did that come from? I'm like, I just felt it, you know.
Yeah,
and that's the beauty thing about it. It's just, I consider myself the minion master up there, the puppet master. It's like, all right, my pretty, stand up, feel steady, make some noise, and everybody has fun with it. And so it's all about putting on a good show.
So you're saying, but you're not calling yourself the Wicked Witch. You just said, my pretties. You're not the Wicked Witch in there. They're your monkeys.
Make some noise.
Now, besides anything that you have ad lib that you've all of a sudden that you're keeping with your repertoire, because I know, you know, we've heard anybody who's been to many a game, whether it be NHL, NBA, Major League Baseball, you know, all the announcers have their own, not necessarily shtick, but stuff that they like to do. And has there anything that you have done in the short amount of time that you said, you know what, it's really done well, I'm going to stick with it, and it's just gone from there, besides, you know, the yes movement that you mentioned and doing the Ric Flair woo? Anything
woo.
Else?
I remember last year's game. I knew if we won, I wanted to do something personal for my wife. And so after every power win, I'll say, Libby, leave the lights on, because it means we're going to party a little bit longer.
Okay.
It's personal touch. I don't know how well that means a lot to the other fans, but that's my personal style on it. But one of the catchphrases I use when Sean Kalanamoku scores a touchdown, I'll say aloha end zone, because he's from Hawaii.
Okay.
So it's like, have some fun with it. You try to personalize each call, almost like, you know, Michael Kay and all them Yankee announcers, they personalize each home run call.
Right.
You try to make it as personal as you can, but a lot of what I do now has just evolved over the years. I mean, when I scream touchdown Pittsburgh, you know, that's evolved. I used to just say touchdown Pittsburgh, you know, or touchdown Erie way back in the day, but there was no emotion to
right.
it or whatever.
Right.
And then I was like, nah, this is boring. You know, let's jazz it up. And sometimes I'll say it with me, Steel City.
Mm-hmm.
And then I envision that the whole crowd's saying it as long as they can. And that's usually when I'll hold it out as long as I can. Let's see who holds it with me. But, you know, it's just, just having fun and keeping the crowd into it. And that's one thing I love seeing, like, comments about it, is saying, hey, Dom kept the crowd into it this year. You know, we may only have 4,000 or 5,000 fans at each game, but you can bet that I'm going to make them as loud as I can and make it as tough of a place to play football in. And I think our record at home this year, 3-1, speaks for itself after going with one win a year over the last two seasons.
Now, has anybody happened to clock you on how long you've done the touchdown?
No, we haven't. No? But I'm going to suggest that maybe somebody could say, what's my record time?
There you go. There you go. Now, besides the PA announcing, you actually had another great opportunity that was asked of you this year. And you've actually expanded your role in a way from being not only the PA announcer for the Power, but you now have gone into the world of color commentating, of color commentating.
Right.
Where did that come about?
Well, I've done the Power pregame show for the last few years for the team, and this year it didn't quite work out with my full-time job and being able to do the Power Plant, or what do we call it, Power Pregame, Power Hour. It's changed names over the years, but the schedule didn't jive. But how it happened is, I guess the regular guy, Mike Logan, who does most of the broadcast, there were a few games that he wasn't going to be able to go on the road. As it turned out, it was against Arizona, this week against Spokane, and against Philadelphia. It's going to be Mother's Day, Father's Day, and I guess what was Easter was the Arizona game. I think it was three holidays he probably couldn't make. But I was excited. I got to admit, when Trib Live, my producer, he goes, hey, would you like to go on the road with the team? They'll pay for your expenses. They'll pay you money, and you get to do color commentary. I'm like, yes, how do I sign up?
Yeah, exactly.
For that?
Yeah, exactly.
And like you said, that's a complete new opportunity for me. I had not done that before the Arizona game. That was my first time, and a lot of fans listening were very supportive. They said it sounded like I had been doing this for years, and that to me was the best compliment you could give me, that I sound like I've been doing this for a long time. I didn't want to be that guy that got nervous, you know, and sounded like an idiot on the broadcast. I mean, people ask me that all the time before PA announcing. They're like, do you get nervous? I'm like, no, by now I've done this so many times that it's natural, but the color commentary I hadn't done yet. So I didn't know how it was going to be, but you know, my play-by-play partner for that game was Ken Laird, who's been a true professional in Pittsburgh for many years. He's done a lot of work for ESPN 1250. He's done Trib Live stuff for a few years. He's a Steelers reporter for the Tribune Review, and he's a consummate professional. And I think the fact that, you know, we played well off each other, and he really boosted my confidence early in that broadcast, and we really didn't step over each other. I thought it was just a good partnership. This week it'll be with Daniel Dudley, so I got to learn a new partner a little bit, but I've done some other stuff with Trib Live Radio with Daniel, so it's just those guys have really made it easy.
Yeah, I think it's just as long as you job. I think as you know, as many years that I've done the podcast, I know that I've had multiple, you know, co-hosts, and I know when you and I did it, you and I gelled very, very well. So I think just as long as you and your partner will be able to gel together, I think the game will go perfectly. And I heard what you did, and you did a fantastic job. I agree with what they said to you. It sounded like you had been doing this for years. So now we're talking about prep before. What about prep for doing color commentating?
Well, color commentating, obviously you want to be familiar with the players, who's who. The play-by-play guy does a lot of that. Well, he played his college ball at Central Florida, you know, last year. He'll rattle off the stats and all that. But it's helpful to know where players, like, maybe rank in the, you know, where they rank in the AFL standings, or who's got the most interceptions. If you can throw that stuff off a little bit, know who the key players are going to be. And obviously the faster you can identify numbers down on the field, the better. So if you're familiar with the roster, that's definitely going to be a big help. In terms of that, it was just a matter of, well, who did what last week to be able to talk about it. I knew heading in, you know, that Aaron Lesway was going to be a prominent part of that because Preciado Rodriguez was still out. But knowing previous scores, knowing Arizona had barely beaten San Jose the week before, but that it was, I believe, Kerry Reed had made the big catch. You know, being able to say that, say, hey, this is Arizona. They are so good at that one-minute offense. They know how to maximize that last possession and break your heart, you know, at the very end. And, you know, knowing clock management rules, I know some fans out there when they're, you know, you're chatting an arena fan and they'll say these announcers don't know what to say or what to do.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to be that guy. And I know the last minute, Pittsburgh had the ball, and Aaron Lessway catches the ball right after the one-minute warning and immediately goes to the ground. And I knew why he did it, and Ken Laird didn't quite – he's like, oh, it looked like he lost his footing a little bit. I'm like, nah, I think they're going to burn the clock now because they don't want Arizona to get it. And it's just funny because he gives me this look like, are you sure? You know. And for a second, I'm like, I think I'm sure. And then next thing you know, Grady kneels it on second down. Clock goes down to 10 seconds. He calls a timeout, and I'm just sitting there like – yeah, I this is exactly what they were doing, and now you got two cracks at the end zone. Because I've seen it before, and that's the main thing for Keller commentary. If, how familiar are you with AFL?
Yeah.
Some of the announcers that come around the league that maybe aren't familiar with it, and you can tell immediately. You know, these guys, do they know the difference? You know, last possession, do they know when you might onside kick it? You know, it's the nuances that I've learned from covering this team now for, this is my fourth year, and that other announcers just don't.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just very similar to like Ari Wolf and Anthony Hernandez. It's, they know exactly, they've been doing it for so long, they were, you know, players. Ari goes all the way back to Albany, the Albany days, et cetera. So it's just a matter of, as I said, being able, knowing the game and being able to put, basically put on a good show. Besides the power, before I let you go here, Dom, you've had another opportunity given to you, and I just want to make sure everybody knows about it also, because you seem to be a very busy man. it has to do with the new ABA franchise there in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it's funny. I write the articles for Pittsburgh Sporting News covering the Pittsburgh Power, and a local fan, Mike Guido, who also does some work for the Sports Crave, I think he's their PR guy now, but he made a comment on my Power article saying, hey, it's nice to see the Power doing well. Hopefully our new ABA team does well. And I was actually at the Power game eating the pregame meal getting ready, and I read this comment. I said, I hadn't even heard about the ABA team. So I have an hour to kill while I'm at the game, and I'm looking them up, and I send them an email saying, you know, I'm an announcer in town. You know, I just – these types of opportunities, you just want to seize them as fast as you can. You want to send an email as soon as the team puts on the email address or something.
Right,
because
right.
That's, you know, you never know when they're going to fill these positions. And just 2 days later, the guy calls. He says, hey, yeah, so I got your email. I was just curious how much experience you have. And I rattled off what all I've done, Erie, Johnstown, the Pittsburgh Power. And pretty much as soon as you said Power at Consol Energy Center, he was just like, oh, yeah, okay. and that's the way – it's the nice thing about the Power gig is finally getting into a major league venue like the Consol Energy Center.
Yeah.
It almost like validates your entire resume. They don't need to see clips or, you know, hear examples of your work anywhere. They're like, if you're good enough to announce at Consol Energy Center, you're definitely good enough to announce, you know, for our routine. I mean, you'll know, obviously, if I'm the right fit for the job.
Right,
but
right.
It was just funny how fast, you know, I emailed them on a Saturday. I think I had the response on Sunday, and they were already like, yep, you'll be our PA announcer. So, you know, it's basketball. It's something I've only done once. I got to fill in for Robert Morris women's basketball on a kid's day where, like, it was local elementary school field trips out to Sewell Center. So that was quite an atmosphere, you know, having all these kids screaming, and I definitely knew how to fire them up. And the DJ was like, was that really necessary to get all these kids screaming? I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
That's why you hired me today. You want me to fire up your crowd and have some fun. And then Robert Morris has given me a few fill-in opportunities. Obviously, they have their full-time guys, but I see an opportunity there to maybe get a future chances with some of their sports. And that's the nice thing about this ABA gig is it's going to be in November, and they sound like it's going to be about 20 home games. So that's more opportunities to do my thing and just keep moving forward.
Exactly. And the last question before I let you go, Dom, are you looking forward to the trip to Spokane?
I see it's going to be a long day tomorrow. This is the itinerary. We're going to take a 3-hour flight. I have to be out of the team apartments at 7:15 a.m. for departing for the airport, catch the shuttle out there. And then it's going to be get to the airport. You got about an hour or so before the flight. 3-hour flight to Denver. I think it's like a 3-hour flight out to Spokane right after that. And then when we get out there, we're not even going right to the hotel. We're going to the arena for the walkthrough.
Oh, wow.
So it's going to be a lot of travel before we even get settled into our hotel room. But then the nice thing is the walkthrough will be over, and then most of the day Friday will just be relaxing, and that's pretty much going to be it for prep time. To relax a little bit, look at some stats, make sure any last second roster moves. I see Spokane made 2 quarterback moves today.
Yep.
So it's going to be getting a little bit of a feel which one I think might start, whether that's Donovan Portery or Dennis Haverla. Of course, learning how to pronounce their names, so they haven't, you know,
yeah,
roster just yet to us, but, what a loss for Spokane seeing Eric Meyer go down. And I'm not going to complain as a Power fan because I'm hoping that this improves our chance in this matchup. But, you know, regardless of who's under center, Andy Olson is a great coach. That's a tough place to play. And I don't think the Power are going to underestimate their opponent this week. I think, regardless of who's under center, the Power better be prepared for a tough game, because if they think it's going to be an easy matchup without Meyer in there, I think they got another thing coming.
Yeah, it should be a very interesting, especially with all this situation that's happened in the AFL recently with the quarterbacks. But, Dom, it was great speaking with you. Congratulations and good luck on all the successes you've had. You've had one heck of a time, and I'm sure you've made a few of us a little bit jealous, I will admit. So, again, thanks, Tom, for joining us, and we hope to speak with you very, very soon in the near future.
I appreciate it, Tim. And if I could get one quick plug, just tell the fans if they want to listen to the broadcast.
Yep.
It's at sportstalk.triblive.com. Obviously, that'll be 10 p.m. Eastern, game time 7 p.m. out there in Spokane. And we'll probably do a half-hour pregame show. So feel free to listen in and give me some criticism. Let me know how I do. And it's always good to hear some Homer broadcasting every once in a while, as opposed to, you know, the league and things like that. So something different if you're bored and you want to listen in.
Yep. So everybody, we've been speaking with Dom Erica. Well, you know, Adel, so a little bit of positive information for the league that came out this week. For the past couple weeks, Arena Fans have been able to put out what the ratings have been on the ESPN2 broadcasts. Week one versus week two. Week one itself, it was at a 0.1. This week, what we found out, it actually was a 0.2. with an increase of the actual average listeners compared to last week. I think we did the math quickly. It was like 50% on the ratings and a positive 29% on the actual audience itself. Now, I was actually dead on, Adam, when I said that I knew once they got into a prime time spot, there would be an increase, some increase, noticeable increase with the actual ratings themselves, and I was actually right. So, I mean, prime time usually means more people that are going to watch the game, right?
Los Angeles also means more people, and the whole, you know, Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley thing, and this Silver Field, mm-hmm. and the hookers in the cages, and all that. all of that is worth something too. Now, here's my issue with that is if I'm the casual fan watching that game, and I don't know anything about the AFL, and I'm just watching ESPN2 because it's on my TV or on at my sports bar. The final score of this game was 70-21.
Yeah.
I mean, the average non-AFL fan would not realize that a wide receiver was playing quarterback at the end of that game. But they would realize that 70-21 is not a good game.
No.
I don't know how much more we could take of this whole LA thing. I think I'll be interested to see what happens the next time the Kiss are on TV. That will really be the telltale on the Deuce in prime time in a good spot, to see what they draw at that point, whether the fans are over it, whether people will flip it on and then flip it back off because they've already seen it. And oh, by the way, the Kiss really aren't very good either.
Well, going through the rest of the schedule, they are on national TV three more times, versus Pittsburgh in 2 weeks. They have the Shock again at Spokane on the 28th, and then they have San Antonio at home on July 19th, and that's also on the CBS Sports Network. So, but I mean, as I said, looking at the actual information itself, I mean, it's good to say, remember, this is the first time that the league has been on ESPN since its rebirth. And I'm sure there were a lot of us who never thought that they would ever be able to get back onto ESPN, but obviously, you know, the league has done a wonderful job in getting them back on in ESPN3. Technology now compared to back then is obviously different, Adam, but, if people think, oh, I'm seeing a 0.1, a 0.2, you know, those numbers aren't very good. People have to understand, look at the numbers for some of the lesser programs that are on cable TV. Some of them are getting 0.1s, 0.2s, etc. You know, this is not the NBA in the playoffs. This is a regular season game. We're not going to be reaching some of the numbers that we did in the NBC days. That was a long time ago. Less stuff on TV. going forward, Adam, what does the league have to, you know, what does the league need to do in order to increase these numbers even, you know, even another 50% next week? Or, because the rest of the games, as far as I can see, I can remember, I think the rest of the ESPN2 games are going to be all on prime time.
Well, have better games. That would be a good start. I don't know whether Portland San Jose is going to be that game. And again, there's a difference between being on at 7 and being on at 10, mm-hmm. like this game is on. So I don't know, you know, about that. And then you're talking about making it all the way until, geez, when is the next ESPN2 game?
It's going to be Saturday, May 17th, Portland at
7. No, beyond that.
On
one of the ESPN news games was changed. Which was the ESPN game news game that
the
was
next,
changed?
The next game coming up.
Oh, that's the game on the 17th?
Yes.
Okay, then the next one on ESPN2 isn't until Monday, July 7th. So, I mean, you're not going to get
No, Saturday, June 28th.
Saturday,
Spokane and LA.
Again, another 10 o'clock game, though.
Yep.
And another game involving LA.
Yep.
So, we'll see. I'll be interested to know if we can get our hands on an approximation as to how many people watch ESPN News.
Okay, and those games are June 1st and June 7th. That's
right. When that time comes.
Yep.
Cause I think that may be a little bit of a telling sign, because I think what we'll see is the ESPN news games, if again we can get our hands on those ratings, will just really only be the hardcore people who are listening to this show and following us on Facebook and all of that fans.
Right. And they're also mid-afternoon games too. They're not going to be, they start at 5 p.m.
So it's, but at that point we'll be able to go back and answer the question of, are we drawing from the mainstream or are we just drawing from AFL fans? Because if this is all we've got and this is only AFL fans, again, there's a big difference between a .2 if you're telling me there are 200,000 AFL fans out there who would have watched this game regardless. Now, if you're telling me there were 50,000 AFL fans that were out there watching regardless and 150,000 new sets of eyeballs took in the game, that's a different story. That, I think, is successful. But if this is 180,000 AFL fans and 20,000 new sets of eyeballs, this was not successful.
Right, and that's it.
And I think, yeah, and we'll see that when the games are on ESPN News.
It will be interesting to see what those ratings are. And if I think if these ratings for ESPN2 can stay steady, there are going to be 6 more games on ESPN2, and that includes the playoffs, the conference championship in August. If they can stay the same, I think, stay at a nominal between a .2 and a .3, I think that would be good. I think if you see a little bit of a backwards tick for the next game on ESPN2, maybe it was the LA Kiss factor. We don't know. Overall, I think the increase, I think the league is going to be happy to see that there was an actual increase in the ratings from week 1 to week 2 on ESPN2. But as you said, there are other variables, the ESPN news factor. I can't remember that. They're not in as many homes as ESPN.
That too.
Okay. Yeah. So,
The game will be, but the game will be on ESPN3 as well at that point.
Good point. That is also true. Besides ESPN2, this past week, and we're talking about the bad game that it was between Spokane and LA, very positive news for Canadian fans who like the Arena Football League.
All one of you.
Now, there's more than one. I promise there's more than just me.
Six of you.
That the game was actually broadcast in Canada on TSN2 this past week without any prior announcement. I know usually we would hear some type of information, but after hearing this, we had Arena Fan. We went ahead and did what we normally do and try to get all the information for you fans. I was able to speak with Bell Media this past week, who is the parent company of TSN, and they were able to let us know that there are going to be 5 more games on ESPN2 for the rest of the season. Most of them are going to be leading up.
TSN2, not ESPN2.
Sorry, TSN2. Leading up to the playoffs, the conference championship game, and the Arena Bowl. One bad thing I guess we could say is that the Arena Bowl itself is going to be actually on tape delay. It's going to be played on the Saturday, on the Sunday at noon Eastern time rather than when it is live on Saturday. But for those who don't have ESPN, who don't have ESPN3, etc., the game will still be on in its entirety. We will not have to worry about having any of those only a 2.5 hour block where the game will possibly be cut off. But I think it's good news. It's the first time since 2007 that the games have been broadcast on the TSN family in Canada. Hey, I'm happy. It gives me a way to kill an evening once a week leading up to the playoffs. So
legally,
yes. So I'm actually happy to see that. So kudos to the league and to TSN getting together to get this. But and some positive information too, possibly for going down the future for AFL fans in Canada. And I haven't told you this, Adam, TSN is expanding to 5 networks as of this fall. So it is very possible that if the partnership between the AFL and ESPN continues into 2015, there may be more games on the TSN network in 2015, but we'll have to wait and see. Hey, come on, be positive.
That affects all the rest of us listening to this show.
Oh man. Anyways, we went ahead and sent out a request for questions. We had a ton of questions coming from you guys, and we're very happy that you want to be a part of the show and get us to answer these questions. Also, please remember that our fan Q&A section is brought to you by Tooker Flags. If you want to have your own personalized flag made for you, for your league, for your fantasy league, if you want to use them specifically for your touch football league, whatever it may be, get and contact Tooker Flags. They are the official sponsor for all of our Arena Fantasy games this year at Arena Fan. So if you want to have your own personalized flag made for you, contact Adam or myself, tim.capra@arenafan.com, adam.markowitz@arenafan.com. We will get you in touch with them, and because you have gone through us, we will be giving you a discount where you'll be able to get your flag for $29.95. That is a $5 discount from what you are currently charged. Tooker Flags, get a piece of the game. Now, going on to the questions themselves, first question we have here, Adam, is from Melvin Moten. We talked about Ellie a little bit before, and maybe we can expound on it a little bit more if necessary, but from Melvin, how much longer can McMillan last throwing his team under the bus and not taking any responsibility for LA's record?
Well, the dude knows what it's like to be a player in this game.
Yeah.
And the dude knows what it's like to be a coach in this league. And he won a Coach of the Year award with a team that's in a far worse position than this LA team is in. So I'm going to give him benefit of the doubt and just say, look, he doesn't have a quarterback. And that's really what it boils down to right now, is he doesn't have a quarterback. Get Coach McMillan a quarterback, and we'll see. Now, the better question is that guy out there? I don't know. We'll have to find out. But I don't, you know, if the question is Coach McMillan going to lose this team, or is Coach McMillan going to get fired from this team, the answer is going to be absolutely not.
No. Second question that came from him is, which QB injury last week is the most costly for the team? Well,
it's clearly Eric Meyer.
I think so too. Yeah, I think so. And it's hopefully we made our reasons known earlier in the show because
I will say this. Had Jason Boltas actually torn his ACL, I would have said Jason Boltas. Because I think Spokane can find a way to evolve into a winner without Eric Meyer. I do not think Orlando stands a rat's ass chance in hell of winning games without Jason Boltas, especially with as badly as Will Masood looked last week.
Yeah, I do agree. I think the Predators actually came off, it seems weird to say they came off easy when it comes to an injury, which really sounds weird, but yeah, they got off lightly. Luckily that he's going to be able, looks like he's going to be able to play next week. The question from Justin Ticino, I hope I pronounced your name properly. We kind of mentioned it, talked about it before. Do you think the LA Kiss will go after Garcia? I think if Aaron wants to play for the LA Kiss and has a reason to play for the LA Kiss, then he will play.
Well put.
For the LA Kiss.
As politically correct and well put as I have heard. We'll go with that.
Yep.
And my answer is yes.
Yep.
I would bet before June that Aaron Garcia will be playing for the LA Kings.
Okay. Okay. Steve McFarland, you talked about Eric Meyer out, who will they bring in? Well, we mentioned before who Spokane has brought in. Let's see. From James Palmer Jr., Adam, what are the chances that the Talons get to the playoffs?
Somebody's got to get to the playoffs in the West. Mm-hmm. I still don't think it's very good. I mean, the correct answer is 33.3%, because they're not beating out Spokane, they're not beating out Arizona, they're not beating out San Jose, but you know, hey, can you tell me which one of those other three teams is the best right now?
No.
I mean, they're the worst three, well, they're three of the worst four teams in the league for sure.
Yeah.
And they're probably the three worst teams in the league. I would still say LA is going to find a way to put this together first, and then I would say Portland, and then San Antonio. So maybe by that standard, I would say maybe 20%.
Okay.
That San Antonio gets in the playoffs.
Another question to him. What is needed for them to start winning?
A quarterback.
Which is,
how many other teams are in that boat?
Yeah, I know. Quite a few. And we just named off four before.
They also, the other thing the Talons need is they really need a pass rush again. They're getting some sacks, but they don't really have the same type of pressure play in and play out as they have when they had Joe Sykes and Tim McGill, obviously. I would say to go away from just sort of the standard cliche answer of a quarterback, I would say you need to develop a pass rush in their front three with their Mac linebacker.
Next question comes to us from Garrett Hazelbaker. What is wrong with Avoodoo? Is it the QB, the O-line, or Coach Pat O'Hara?
Or all of the above. It really is all of the above in New Orleans. You've got quarterbacks playing hurt. You've got guys who are getting injured all over the place. I don't really know how well prepared, the team has been to come out there and play games. I know P.O. can coach. I would say that the problem in New Orleans really is all of the above. And the other big problem that New Orleans has is it is definitively the worst team in its own conference. And that's, you know, there isn't, let's put it this way, there still isn't the team that they play to that they haven't lost to.
Right.
And I don't know, you know, when and if that is necessarily really going to change.
Next question comes to us from Brian Derry. First, one of the questions he asked is, and a follow-up about the January report about Chicago coming to the Sears Center. We've not heard anything of that sort, and I know that if the league is in contact with a new Chicago franchise, that they're going to keep things under wraps as much as possible, and they have their reasons why. But if we hear anything like the commissioner does every year, Adam, we will hear about any type of expansion during Arena Bowl.
Well, except for we didn't hear about Portland at the Arena Bowl.
No, that's true. That is true because I guess at the
– Oh, wait, that wasn't expansion. I'm sorry.
At that point also, yeah. At that point it wasn't a – it hadn't been finalized, so, you know, why announce things that something that could possibly fail or fall through if it's – anyways. Brian also mentioned something about seeing a lot of the of 10,000-plus attendances. We've talked about attendances before in the past, and we do know that there is a specific way usually that a team will announce – the attendances, you know, when it comes to tickets given out, tickets, butts and seats, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Anybody who watched that Jacksonville game last week with an arena with a capacity of 10,100, do you really think there were only 400 empty seats in that place? I think there was an average of about 400 empty seats per section in that place. Mm-hmm. Slight exaggeration.
And I know, I think is in years past, like the NFL used to announce, I think, tickets given out or tickets, butts in seat, but, you know, things have changed. I mean, it's the same thing. Look at Major League Baseball. And here's a good example. A couple weeks ago, there was three very cold games played in Minnesota. There was no way the amount of people that were there that they announced. And anyway, and the other day in Kansas City, they're playing the Toronto Blue Jays. Same exact thing. There's no way it had rained. There's no way that there were those numbers in there. Are the numbers as close as they are to what they announce in where's another bad place? Miami? Miami's pretty close. But then again, their numbers are horrible.
When 1,400 fans show up to a game.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. So they are announced a specific way in the AFL, and sometimes the 10,000 is right, but it is just a matter of do the butts match the tickets that are given out or sold. I'll leave it at that. Let's see. A question comes to us from Chris Becker. He's wondering, why doesn't the league go to flex scheduling on ESPN or CBS?
It might. I mean, we have seen them, quote, flex before.
Yes, they have.
I don't know whether there is something in the agreement that each team needs to be showcased on national television, which may have something to do with it. I would bet you're going to see flex. Now, whether you see it on ESPN, that I don't know, but I would bet you're going to see some flex games on CBS.
I would think so, too. They've done it, as I said, they did it in years past. I know they did it on NFL Network. Wasn't that many times, though, but it has been done. And
well, week 20 is the perfect time to do that because, I mean, the Orlando-Arizona game would probably be an abortion one way or the other, but even if it wasn't, you know, you're going to want to go to the game with the most impact, you know, on the standings.
Right. And
And San Antonio and LA the week before. Everybody get excited about that one.
Remember, guys, they have to understand that sure, you can change the locale of the broadcasting team, but it's just a matter of is the arena available on a specific date?
Well, you could also flex, you know, for example, on the last day of the season.
Yeah.
Everybody plays that Saturday.
Okay, then that's perfect. That's the perfect scenario. Perfect.
So, I mean, Orlando and Arizona are slotted in at 7, but so is Jacksonville and LA. Cleveland and Tampa Bay is slotted in at 7:30. Maybe you can move that game up a half hour to get it in that time slot. Or you can move New Orleans, San Antonio if you had to. I don't know why you would, but if you had to, up an hour. Or same thing with Iowa, San Jose, up an hour. Or maybe Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, back 2 hours.
Yep.
Whatever the case is to get it in that time slot, or maybe the time slot would be available otherwise.
And we do know that if this does occur, that the league has had a good record when it comes to announcing that the games have actually been changed. So if there
as was the case with the Portland game this week.
Exactly. From Raleigh Pierre Wheaton, he's talking about with one conference having 2 3-team divisions, and the other having 2 4-team divisions, isn't it time for the AFL to give up divisions completely?
Preach. Yes, absolutely. Now isn't the time. 5 months ago was the time for them to give up on divisions.
I think looking at it, I think they would have been able to keep the same teams. I mean, it's not like you wanted to go north south. You want to try to keep this as easy as possible when it comes to travel, but I think you wouldn't have run into this problem, Adam, of playing teams really, to me, in an unbalanced schedule. You might been able to balance these schedules a little bit more, and it would have been very interesting when it came to the current playoff structure that the league has set out for the tiebreakers.
Well, tiebreakers we know don't mean as much when you play 3 games against everybody. And look, it probably would have made more sense for Spokane to play 3 games against, for example, Arizona, than it would have for Spokane to play 2 games against, for example, Tampa Bay.
Mm-hmm.
So, and take that all.
I still think it would have worked because if you look at it, as an example, in the Eastern Division, we'll use the Gladiators as the example. There are 3 teams in right now, so that's 6. You have the other teams in the other division. That is a grand total of 8. So there's 14. If I did my math properly. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. Yeah, 14 games. 4 games against the National Conference. Whether it be 2, maybe 1, home and home. It would have worked.
Would have looked a lot better than that schedule we got now.
It would have worked quite well. And it probably would have cut down on travel, quite a bit. You know, Eastern Division, you won't have to travel as much, but it's, fly as much when those teams up north, but I think it would have worked. I think hopefully they will revisit it, depending on what teams come in next year, and what it matters. You know, you can still keep your conferences, but just go with two conferences. I think it would have worked out well.
East, West, done.
Yeah. Last question to us comes from Jeremy Anderson. Thoughts on the Iowa signing of Jared Perry, who refused to report, been traded to Arizona, and a claim order swap. Then the person who they traded refused to report. So then he was traded back to Arizona for Perry and a claim order swap. Will Perry report to Iowa? What's going on? I mean, he said it's very interesting stuff. We've seen it happen before, though, a few times in the Arena Football League, haven't we?
Yeah, we had Jeff Bushy on earlier this year, managing partner of the Jacksonville Sharks. He explained to us that basically a deal can get voided in the event that players don't show up. In this case, you know, obviously one of the players in this deal wasn't going to show up, and the option was exercised to void the deal because of that. This is also why the Jacksonville Sharks ended up trading Tracy Belton down to, and Kyle Rowley down to Orlando in exchange for Aaron Garcia. Mm-hmm. And we see how well that worked out. So now I guess my question while we're thinking about it would be, do technically the Sharks own the rights to Matt Markarell and Bernard Morris?
Hmm.
Don't know if it really matters though.
I mean, I'm sure they can make a trade. We've seen claim order spots and future considerations trade so much this year. You know, sometimes they'll get traded back for themselves if they go back to the same team. So something would be possible, but then again, we were talking about Morris before. Maybe he just doesn't want to play anymore.
In the AFL, anything is possible.
Yeah. So, thanks for the questions, guys. That was good questions this week. Again, we will make sure that we send out a notice on social media, whether it be Facebook, Twitter, or any other way, or on the message boards. Make sure that you guys get us your questions, and we will try to answer them. Speaking of both social media, by the way, besides Twitter and Facebook, we do have other accounts. You can listen to all the past episodes of AFL Tonight over at our SoundCloud account. That's at soundcloud.com/arenafan. We have our YouTube page, and that is youtube.com/arenafanonline. And do not forget our Instagram account, and that is also instagram.com/arenafan. Week 9, Adam, we have we have 4 teams on bye week, and for 2 teams, it's good that they are Orlando and Tampa Bay because of the injuries that they had at quarterback. San Antonio and San Jose are the other 2 that are currently on a bye. Unfortunately, though, on Friday night, this stuff that's happened just in the past couple of hours with the Spokane Shock, this is the reason why they've had to rush in order to get some quarterbacks that they could possibly be under center this week. They have a short week, and they're playing the Pittsburgh Power on Friday.
Yeah, and Spokane is not going to throw this ball 20 times in this game in all likelihood. Even if it is one of these 2 new guys that comes in, this is going to be a very IFL-style offense. Now, as curious as this is, we may be onto something here. Maybe in this day and age of these quarterbacks just not being very good in the AFL, this is what the AFL needs, to go to more of a run sort of style, wildcat kind of looking. I joked before about the wing T offense. You know, maybe scores come down. Maybe it's good for the league. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I mean, I don't know how you could pick Spokane in this game, but I've got to assume that Pittsburgh's going to win, even though Tommy Grady, you know, for my money, still hasn't been all that impressive this year.
Yeah, it's same thing. I think if it were different, but we've also seen how Pittsburgh has done by going over to the West Coast. They played quite well versus Arizona, even though they did lose. But yeah, for this one, for my money right now this week, just based on the situation that's currently happening in Spokane, I would pick Pittsburgh to win this game too.
This would have been a tough one for Spokane, even if Eric Meyer was healthy, having to turn around from playing on the road on Sunday to playing at home on Friday. It would have been tough one way or the other.
Yeah. Mind you, my thought too, though, Adam, is that even it was only in L.A. It was only in Anaheim. So it's not like they were playing in the Midwest and not like they were playing on the East Coast. I think if they
Yeah, but they still probably flew home the next day, which means they really weren't getting started, you know, with their preparation until probably today or Tuesday. Mm-hmm. It really only gives you 2 days and then a walkthrough and then the game. So, and then adding new quarterbacks and it's just, it's a mess.
And as everybody heard in the interview prior, as Dom mentioned, they're flying in tomorrow and they're doing the walkthrough right away. So that is going to be a long day for Pittsburgh too. So you've done the Spokane flight, Adam. I mean, there could be a little bit of not necessarily jet lag, but a 3 hour difference. They're going to be playing at, you know, they're going to be 10 o'clock our time, 7 o'clock their time. That can mess up a team's rhythm quite a bit, but we'll have to see what happens. As I said, there's a lot of variables that were not expected for this actual game. On Saturday, New Orleans is traveling to Philadelphia, and that is the CBS Sports Network Game of the Week.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to think if the Voodoo really realistically have any shot at the playoffs, this is a game that they really need to win. But, you know, I can say the same sort of thing about Philadelphia. Philly is way, way back right now. I mean, if you started the playoffs today, I mean, you would see all sorts of really weird stuff over in the American Conference. Cleveland would be the top seed. Orlando would be winning the South. And Pittsburgh and Iowa would be the other two teams in the playoffs. I mean, Philly and Jacksonville would both be out, and so would Tampa Bay. That's stunning. And for Philadelphia, look, the time is now. You got to get on your horse. So, I would hope for Philly's sake that it is going to be able to find a way to win this game. And if not, that's when the questions have to start being asked. But do remember, the Soul have not lost a home game yet this year. They are 2-0 at home. They are playing against a Voodoo team that has not won a game on the road yet this year. If you take out Cleveland, the rest of the teams in this conference only have a combined 5 wins on the road. That's not going to get the job done. So I've got to think that Philadelphia will comfortably take this game against New Orleans.
Yep. The undefeated undefeated Cleveland Gladiators are at home. And they're going to be hosting the aforementioned, as we were mentioning earlier, the offensive challenged LA Kiss.
Yeah. A few weeks ago, these two teams played, and Cleveland was definitively the better team based upon all – I didn't actually watch the game, but based upon all reports that I heard about the game. There's really no reason not to think that Cleveland, you know, would get caught in this one. The only thing that I will say – is, you know, maybe LA will finally get a fire under its backside. Maybe Cleveland will come back to earth a little bit. Remember, the Cleveland's off the bye. That's a good thing in the NFL. That's a bad thing in the AFL. So, I mean, I would give LA a puncher's chance in this game, but you almost have to take Cleveland.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. As I said, they've done their business so far that they've done on the road. They're, you know, they're undefeated. They're 4-0 on the road. Yeah, unless something happens and the earth opens up during the game, I don't see a reason why Cleveland shouldn't win this game. So, the next game on the schedule is Jacksonville's traveling to the Iowa Barnstormers.
Yeah, and another one of these interesting games, because Jacksonville already 5 losses in the bank. I mean, a lot of people thought Jacksonville was going to win 11, 12 games this year, and you know, obviously they got to pretty much run out to be able to do that. The Sharks have yet to win a road game this year. Iowa's also yet to lose a home game. So, I mean, I guess the initial inkling would be, of course, Jacksonville has to win this game. But then when you look at it, and you look at what Iowa's done of late, has it been really, really impressive? Not, you know, insanely impressive, but the win against San Antonio was a good, comfortable one. And look, you know, the Barnstormers had Philly on the ropes, and had they won that game, they'd be on a 4-game winning streak right now, and they also gave Cleveland a really good game. So I'm going to give Iowa the nod in this game.
This is Jacksonville's first game ever in Des Moines. Jacksonville has won all the games in the actual series. What's also interesting too here, Adam, is that Coach Hohensee is actually, winless. Not only versus the Sharks, but also versus Coach Moss. So it's, I don't know if that makes any much of a difference, but, I would, I'd probably give a nod to Iowa in this one. Last game of the week, which by the way was a modification of the schedule. The team and the league announced this change. The undefeated Arizona Rattlers are traveling to the Portland Thunder. This game was supposed to be on Saturday, but because of the, NBA game and the Trailblazers, this one was moved to Sunday, Mother's Day night.
Ugh.
Yeah. And as I said, Arizona, team record for wins to start off a season, traveling to the Portland Thunder, who's been playing better as of late. They themselves have won, two in a row. So it's, the way that Arizona is going with these teams that we think that they're going to get totally blown out by or whatever, which Arizona team, Adam, is going to be showing up? Because there have been even though they are undefeated, there's been a lot of very close calls. A lot of close calls for this Arizona Rattlers team.
Yeah, I think the angry, pissed off Rattlers are going to show up on Mother's Day, in Portland. I don't think anybody is going to want to be there for that game, at least in terms of the players. I think they'd much rather be with their moms, as I will be. I think Arizona's gonna just cripple Portland in this game. I think 2 weeks ago, you would have looked at this game and said, man, Arizona's gonna win this game by 30. I still think Arizona's gonna win this game by 30, but, it's got a little bit of a different mindset to it now that we've seen Portland come up with two straight wins. But let's put this in a bottle for a second and look at what it really is. Tampa Bay is a wreck right now, and Jacksonville still has 5 losses. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, maybe Jacksonville isn't that good. Maybe coming east and winning 2 games against 2 teams from Florida isn't that impressive. And maybe we're going to see Arizona really open up a can here on Portland.
Okay, well, let me throw this out. What this is the same Arizona team that barely knocked off San Antonio.
Yeah, but this is an Arizona offense which is going to score 70 points in this game in all likelihood. That's the difference here between what I see with Arizona and what I see, in Portland. I don't see Portland scoring 60 again on this team. I understand Arizona's had its problems defensively, but Arizona also has a history of when it gets rolling, that it gets rolling on defense especially. So, I mean, this game could have 28 straight points by Arizona on multiple occasions. And don't be shocked if that's what actually happens.
Yeah. It should be a good either way. As I said, it's a lot of weird things have happened in the AFL so far through 8 weeks. And it's just, I'm sure we're going to see a lot more as the season goes on, but it's a couple of games this week that can actually go either way. So, past couple weeks, you've been talking about, let's see, where do we go? We had playoffs. You talked NHL playoffs. You talked about, I think last week it was horse racing. What you have for us as your last word this week?
I didn't do so good with the horse racing, but hey, you know what? I had Connecticut winning the national championship. So that's anybody who says I got that one wrong, I will for the next 150 times or so be pointing back to being right about Connecticut. But anyway, NFL draft is on Thursday night. I'm a Texans fan, so I am hoping that they're going to go with Jadeveon Clowney. Actually, I'm hoping they trade the pick, but Jadeveon Clowney will be the first pick in the draft, and I would like to see them take Teddy Bridgewater at pick number 33.
Just out of curiosity, I'm going to ask you, where does Johnny Football go?
Four to Cleveland.
Okay.
I don't know. That's my best guess.
That's your best guess?
Maybe 3 to Jacksonville, but I would say in order, if I had to guess, it would be – if you ask me what my gut was, I would say Cleveland at 4, mm-hmm. then Jacksonville at 3, and then Minnesota at 8. That would be my bet. I don't think he's going to fall out of
it. I know a lot of Cowboys fans are thinking the best case scenario is that Johnny Football stays in Texas.
Johnny Football is not – if he's staying in Texas, he's going to Houston, and I'm going to cry if he goes number 1 to Houston. I will come on the show, and I will literally cry next week.
We'll find out. So – All right. So everybody, for everybody here at AFL tonight, for Adam Markowitz, I'm Tim Capper. Enjoy the week and watch the rebound off the net.